Welcome to my journeys and stories around the old county of Gwent. Well, the equinox is past. The light and dark point of balance. And something has tipped in the feel of things. And on the last day of September, I went walking on what was a perfect autumn day. And I find that walking in the still autumn sunshine often brings about a kind of dishevelment of thought. Rambler was walking nearby for most of the day. We walked along quietly together. Even though there wasn't any wind at all, her hair was tumbled about all over the place, russet and grey, light and shadow, so she was dishevelled too. But she had a gentle, quiet, kind expression on her face, as if her thoughts were taking on a new rhythm which they were just getting used to. I found myself thinking back to how she was at the spring equinox, an eager girl's petaled fingers reaching out, gesticulating, taking a hold. And now her hands are weathered and are gently loosing their hold, like the trees we're walking under, letting go of their leaves. Well now, if you remember, last episode, we were up peering at Tuintidir and St. Idyd's Church through the driving rain in Mynyddyslwyn. And we had attempted to follow several routes that had ended up saying to us, no, not this way, and no, not this way either. But this episode, it turned out to be a day for delightful surrender, and I decided to walk along an official path down in the valley, following the Sirhawi River, the Sirhawi Valley Walk, which is a long walk, a long distance footpath, which I could have followed from Newport. And the section I was doing, at least, is very flat and easy. It's also a cycle path, really. Now, in case you're confused, this land we're travelling in the west of the old land of Gwent, has the Rumney River forming the old western border, but the Sirhawi River really flows quite close to it, and between the two rivers are the towns of Caerphilly and Blackwood. The Rumney we've travelled with a bit already, from where it enters the sea at the edge of the Gwent Levels, and the Sirhawi isn't a very long river, but it rises just above Tredegar, and it flows into the Ebw, which, as we know, joins the Usk at the very last minute before entering the sea at Newport. Oh, and if you're someone who likes to know these things, we've just hopped across to another OS map. We're now on Explorer 166. We won't be on this map for very long, really, but this is the one we need for our journey on the western edge. So, when I set out this fine autumn morning, there were still wreaths of mist lying in the valley. And up above, on the hill, St. Idyd's Church with its lovely white tower looked splendid against the blue sky. And because it was a day for not really searching for anything, and for just feeling my way into autumn, I spent some time walking in the little lanes around Cwmfelyn Fach. And there's a lovely poem by W.H. Davis, who was the man who wrote, "What is this life if full of care? We have no time to stand and stare." He was born in Newport, and he has a poem called Rich Days, which begins, "Welcome to you, rich autumn days. ere comes the cold leaf-picking wind. And it ends with the lines, and woodnuts rich to make us go into the loneliest lanes we know. And it felt a bit like that, walking around some of the steep little lanes around Cwmfelin Fach. In the village itself, the little villages of former glories that lie along this valley have got their own melancholy, I think, that's made a little softer on a mild autumn day. So, pausing only to note that the huge Pioneer Hotel, which really dominates the village, and it was built, I think, at the start of the 20th century, but it's long been falling into disrepair. It's now been bought to be turned into flats, 14 flats, the Pioneer Flats. And from there then I made my way onto the trail. And there were a very few people out and about on the trail itself, enjoying the autumn day, cyclists, strollers. And it's funny, every autumn has similarities, but also its own particular flavour each year. And this year is a huge year for acorn crop. And there are lots of oak trees growing each side of the path. And one of my main impressions is I could virtually hear people coming in, approaching from the opposite direction before I could see them, because I could hear the crunch of acorns underfoot. And also the dryness of the leaves because of the dry time that the trees had of it this year. So some leaves are falling earlier, I think, than normal, but falling in a slightly more desiccated state. They still have mostly their green colours at the moment, though the turning is definitely beginning, the yellowing and the oranging of the leaves. And you may know that however stormy it may be, really it's the tree that has to decide when to let go of its leaves. A strong wind is as likely to blow down a branch or even blow over the tree itself, if it is not yet ready to let its leaves go. And today is very, very still, but the trees are starting to let go of their leaves. And there's that lovely sensation, even though it's a still day, when there's an occasional little gentle breeze and the trees are ready. There's a little cascade of leaves as you walk below them, so that if you carry on and don't brush yourself down, you may arrive at your destination leaf covered. And I remember the game we used to play as children, where we used to try and catch the falling leaves before they hit the ground. And there's some nice signage that Caerphilly Borough Council have put up along the way that helps wind your own journey into the many journeys that have been made over the years along this valley. And of course, here and there are bridges where you can cross the river to the main road that's on the other side. And I decided that I was going to cross over the bridge into Ynysthie, where my great-great-grandfather Henry Bailey lived, who I mentioned in the last episode. And I was wondering if I could get myself a sandwich or something. And it's not obvious that I could, because so many of the little shops have closed in the villages. So I asked a couple of women who were out and about in the sunshine, and although one thought there wasn't a shop, the other one knew that there was. And she was right. Just down the little high street, in a little row of houses, converted from a house into a little shop front, is the Mog Cabin. And the Mog Cabin, hooray, had a very nice selection of rolls. So it was okay, I could get something for lunch. And I was hoping to have a bit of a conversation with the shopkeeper lady about about how she'd opened the shop. But I didn't really get the chance because there was a deep conversation going on in the shop, a very delicious and engaging one, which I couldn't help overhearing part of as I stood waiting to pay, between several older women who were discussing many matters, one of which was a young man who had appeared to be a bit of a fly by night, but ultimately turned out to be something and nothing. And I came away from the shop thinking about fly-by-nights and how I think on the whole I'd rather be a fly-by-night than something and nothing. But then I thought, really, we're all something and nothing. And that's no bad thing. And a few people had come out of their houses on the streets of Ynysthie and were sat in chairs in front of their houses enjoying the autumn sun. So I sat and ate my roll by the bridge and thought about something and thought about nothing. And then I crossed back over the bridge and carried on along the path. Rambler by now had walked on ahead, but she'd already said that she was going to watch the water flow beneath the bridge by the mill. And I knew where she must mean. Not so far along the path from Ynysthie is Gellie Groes. And there is an old corn mill that has stood since it was built in the early 17th century, its large wooden wheel powered by the waters of the Sirhawy. When Fred Hando visited in the 50s, it was still a working mill, and he had a long chat and was shown around by the miller. But now it's disused and in some disrepair. There are brown heritage signs from the main road directing you to the mill, but when you get there, there is nothing at all to tell you about its history, except for one plaque on the wall. And that plaque tells you something very specific. In fact, it commemorates Arthur Artie Ernest Moore, 1887 to 1949, pioneer in the history of wireless telegraphy. And it says that from here he picked up the Titanic's SOS signal on April the 15th, 1912. Arthur Moore's family lived and worked as the millers at the mill, and he was interested in the very early days of wireless telegraphy. And when he picked up the distress signal in Morse code from the Titanic, and he was the first person in Britain to do so, he got on his bike and he cycled to the police station in Caerphilly and reported what he'd heard, and was immediately discounted, probably on the basis that nobody believed that a signal could be picked up over 3,000 miles away. But of course, he was very soon proved sadly correct. What an incredibly frustrating thing it must have been. A bit like Cassandra predicting the future and never being believed, to have built your homemade kit so early on in the process, which could receive such a signal, but nobody quite believes it. Anyway, Artie Evans is justly remembered by a plaque, but there's nothing else at all to be seen about the mill, or the bridge, or the little community of cottages around it. And there was no handy miller to invite me in and regale me with anecdotes and show me the workings. So anyway, I turned away and began to walk off. But after a few minutes, I thought to myself, I can't believe there's nothing. There's nothing at all. Maybe I didn't actually look properly around on the far side. So I retraced my steps and I went back just to double check that I hadn't missed anything. And I was very glad I did, because a lady was walking over the bridge. She must have just passed Rambler as she came in. And I asked her whether she knew anything about the mill. And it turns out that she did, because she lives in the little cottage just along from the mill, which is called Islwyn Cottage. And she knew about the history of her own house, and she knew that this was where the poet Islwyn had his early Welsh poetry printed, and that also in this house where she now lives, Presbyterian services were held before Silo Chapel, which is just 100 yards further on again, was built in 1803. So we ended up talking about changes and signs and things that fall into disrepair and things that continue. And so by the end of our conversation, I felt that even if I hadn't been shown round by a jolly miller, at least I'd had the chance to talk to somebody who knew and loved the area. Well, before too long, it was time for me to leave the path, and the day drew to a close. If I'd been a week or so earlier, I would have caught sight of a temporary artwork, let's call it, just a bit further along the valley, on the road in Pontllanfraith. Because all along the side of a road bridge there, in response to the current George Cross flag-waving debate that's in the news, someone had hung a selection of flags of the world and left one spare rectangle in the middle in which they had written, "Flags, is it?" Perfect. Well, seeing as we've encountered poet Islwyn briefly in this episode and the last, and this is his patch, so to speak, I thought we could end with a little quote in English translation from his long poem, The Storm. Everything is sacred. Yonder hills are crowned by a heavenly poetry. And many a brother and forefather dear to me, whose names and fame are known to no one now, silent phantoms of the age that bore them, have sung or wept according to life's experiences along these mountains at many a noontide. We, like them, will leave a legacy of sweet memories, an inspiration and astonished thought for the gentle breeze to cherish ever, or fade forever in the mist above. All the world is sacred, and every mountain bears its cherub and eternal song. Thank you for keeping me company on my journeys through the old land of Gwent, and I'll see you again on down the track.